I'm John Hedrick. This is the 10th of November, 2001. I'm doing an interview with Andreas Matossian in Ebersville, Illinois. Mr. Matossian, please state your full name and spell it, please.
It's A period Andreas, A-N-D-R-E-A-S, Matossian, M-A-T-O-E-S-I-A-N.
Thank you. Mr. Matossian, we've spoken a bit about Lincoln Place. Could you tell me what it was like growing up there?
It was, of course, I knew no other life, but from talking to friends, it was a great experience because there were a lot of kids, every age group. It was a small neighborhood. There was always your buddies to hang around with. There was a community center, and it was a very close-knit, it was actually a neighborhood is what it was, with different ethnic groups. Great experience.
Okay. When did you live there?
I was born in 1937, and I lived there until college, until I guess I was 18 years old. So, and then, well, even during college, then when I got married, I lived there for 21 years.
When did your parents move to
Lincoln Place? I believe that was 1920.
Oh, okay. Where did they come from?
Armenia. Both parents from Armenia.
Okay. So they both immigrated about 1920?
I think my mother was a little earlier. My mother immigrated first to Davenport, Bettendorf, Iowa. My father came to Granite City. He had two cousins that paid his way over in 1920. It could have been a little earlier than 1920, and then my mother was in Iowa, and they got married, and she, of course, then moved to Grand City.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned going to school. Could you tell me about going to school while you lived at Lincoln Place?
You mean grade school?
Sure, grade school or high school.
Sure. At the community center, there was a, I guess nowadays it would be called preschool. There was no kindergarten, as I recall. And most of the children of my generation went to the community center, and they had like a, I don't know if you call it day school or what. I remember a little bit about it, and then we started first grade. Went to 1 through 6 at Washington School, which was actually at West Granite, which I guess is less than a mile away from where I lived. And then junior high was in downtown Granite City. And then, of course, the high school was out. High school was 3 miles from the house.
Okay. Any specific memories of grade school?
Oh, sure. The first through the sixth grade. I remember it well. But what about it exactly?
Oh,
I understand that I didn't speak much English when I started school. I'm told by my older, because my parents spoke Armenian in the home, and I guess my English was not too good. I spoke pretty good Armenian, better than I do now. The teachers were all very, very nice in grade school. I understand from later on, after I became an adult, that they chose the teachers very carefully for Washington School. When I say carefully, I guess those who understood that the students came from all these varied backgrounds. But the teachers were all very kind, and there are still a few of them living that I occasionally meet. And I know they've always said that the students at Washington School were easy to control. There was no discipline problem because it was just the threat of telling our parents that we were out of line. They said it was very easy to control the students.
It sounds like they made a intentional effort to pick teachers that would appreciate the diverse nature of the community.
That's my understanding of
it. Armenian being your first language spoken in home, about what time did English become more comfortable? How was it work your way into that in the school system?
Well, I think I always spoke English and Armenian at home, but I guess I'm not sure. I thought I spoke English. It's a strange thing to try to remember. My, of course, older brothers and sisters, I was the youngest until the, for about 10 years. I have a younger brother who's 11 years younger than I am. But, of course, you learn English from them and from your playmates. But I don't recall any problem with the language.
All right.
There was a bit of a problem of pronouncing that and them. Because of the, I guess for my parents, that came out as dat.
Okay.
Those came out as does, the TH sounds. But other than that, we in effect taught our parents English, I believe. We kids that, as we grew up, were probably teaching our parents.
From our talk before, you mentioned that your father ran a barber shop there. I think I've got a small diagram here.
He was a barber for about almost 60 years.
And is that the correct location there on what?
Right next to Gabby's Tavern. It was 938 Needring House, I believe.
Okay.
The Colliff Building. Oh, I see how this map works now. Okay, you've got... Yeah, let's see. This is Needring House. Actually, I think the Donjoyan restaurant was on the corner. And oh, I see. Okay, here's the dividing. Artist Cleaners, Gabby's Tavern, and later Artist Cleaners. This area here, right next to the barbershop, okay, there was a silent movie house, Donjoyan Restaurant, that was on the corner. In between, there was a very narrow building that was later Gabby's Tavern, Gabby's Taproom, and the barbershop, Colliff Building, correct?
Okay.
In between the Colliff Building and my dad's shop was a recessed area that was actually a garden type, and it was a coffee house. The DePegans, I think, own that. That's pretty close.
Okay. Was the barbershop kind of a gathering spot for folks, too, to share stories? And
sure. It was. Of course, there were business places. It was different than a restaurant or a tavern. But it was, when I was barber, I worked my way through college and law school as a barber. Friends would drop in and chat. More of gathering places, there was were some of the taverns. There was a little confectionery pool room where there was a lot of congregating for the younger folks. To some extent, though, the barbershops were, yeah.
As far as you mentioned preschool in the community center or clubhouse, depending on how it was called, what were some of the type of things they taught there as far as, for lack of better words, the Americanization process?
I don't think it was that important for kids of my generation. I can remember we had little cots to take naps on.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember some of the lunches that was served in the basement area, but I think it was more like a games type thing, more of a recreational. I guess they may have given us some lessons. I don't recall that. I don't remember any writing. When I say preschool, I don't think it was a formalized. That could have possibly started, and I'm not sure, you'd have to talk to someone older, possibly for the kids that were 10 years older than I am, they may have had more difficulty with the English language, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But it's a good point, and I'm going to have to find out myself. I'd like to know why the preschool was started, because preschool was, I don't think the school system had kindergarten. That's a good point. I don't know.
Okay. Now, for the older folks over there, there's been talk about citizenship classes, that type of thing, from talking to other folks. Any memories of talking to either your father or your mother about those type of things?
I understand from talking to my mother and father that my mother used to help some of the people with taking their citizenship test. My mother had gone to school in the U.S. Through possibly the eighth grade or so. My dad, I think, who was older, he had gone to school in the old country but did not have any formal training in America. He's actually self-taught. He used to love to read the dictionary of all things.
Okay.
And an ardent reader. But my mother would help some of the older people. I can remember her having friends come over. They would drink Turkish coffee and have cakes and whatnot. She would write letters for them or read letters mm-hmm. to them that they got from the old country. My dad was, his whole life was work, 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 family,
yeah.
and taking care of the family. It's interesting that my mother had no accent, not much of an accent, very little. My father had a pretty heavy accent. And I think it makes a difference on what age you come to the country. My mother was younger when she came to the U.S. She could have been 14, 13, I'm not sure. My father was near 20 when he came to this country.
Okay.
Incidentally, when you ask about ages, as everyone in Lincoln Police used to say when you'd ask when someone would die or whatever, how old were they? He said, well, his age is listed as 80, but he was much older.
Okay.
I understand they lied about their age. It would help to come into the country when you were younger.
Okay. Mother spoke, mother and father both spoke Armenian. Were there any other languages that they worked with?
Everybody knew a few words in other languages, such as Spanish, mm-hmm. Hungarian, Macedonian, Bulgarian. I know my uncle spoke quite a bit of Turkish because Armenia was taken over by Turkey.
Yes.
But many of the words spoken was listed as Armenian was actually there were some Turkish words.
Okay.
By the way, as an aside, a friend of mine who married someone from the old country, she came over later, and she taught him this. He said to me one day, what does Don Salada mean? I said, basement. He said, no, there's no such word in Armenian. It was pidgin English. Don Salad is down in the cellar. My folks used that for years, Don Salad, or sometimes Dom, D-O-M, cellar, Dom Salad. So so your original question was about different languages. Even growing up, I spoke a few words of Hungarian, Macedonian, but basically my folks knew a little bit of other languages. Now the butchers and the grocery owners, I may have mentioned to you
okay.
before, it seems like they spoke several languages. I can remember going to the grocery store, and there were like five or six grocery stores in Lincoln Place. One was run by an Armenian family. And there were, I think, four run by Macedonians.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember standing at the butcher counter, and the butcher would speak to one of the Mexican ladies in Spanish, and then would greet me in an Armenian word or two, or greeting, and then speak to different people in their own language. I guess just enough to serve them, you know, what kind of meat they wanted, what kind of groceries and so forth.
Sure.
And I know from looking at old naturalization records, I don't know if you're interested in doing that sometime, they were at the City Hall in Granite City. They've now been moved to Edwardsville. And in fact, Charlie Mersin, who you said you interviewed, came up one time and we looked up some old records. These are naturalization records, and I'm not quite sure if there was a petition for naturalization, then there was a final order or what by the court. But on some of the papers, there would be someone who signed that that person was a person of good character.
Okay.
And I've noticed a lot of the names as witnesses are vouching for that person's credibility were the grocery owners. I've seen the name Lavachev and Mitzev. And so I don't quite know how that worked. I've seen their name many times. If someone was going to go get their naturalization papers, the final test, which I understand was pretty simple, a few questions were asked in English. By back then, state circuit judges that I guess were helping out the federal immigration people. But I don't know if someone told them they needed someone to vouch, a citizen to vouch for their character, but I noticed a lot of the grocers signed as witnesses.
That's interesting. Because the interaction in a grocery store, you'd have lots of different language,
right.
Lots of different family background.
Certainly the grocery stores, people would go to the grocery store, or you could call them on the phone and order over the phone. I think Schnucks may have started that recently. For a fee, they'll deliver groceries to you. We had that for years. In fact, when I became 15 and got a driver's license, I did deliver groceries in Lincoln Place. That was kind of a plus job. My mother did it many times. She'd call the grocery store and say, I want such and such, and they would deliver it. I don't know if they made one or two, or any time of the day they made deliveries. Each grocery store had a panel truck, a small panel truck in which they delivered groceries.
Quite a difference now.
Yeah. As far as gathering place, I would say the grocery store was the gathering place, and the community center, the clubhouse, and then the coffee house.
Okay.
Of course, there were taverns. There were 11 taverns, too. That mainly men went to taverns back then. You didn't see women in taverns.
Seems like over the time, the perception of what a tavern is now is a lot different from what it was there.
Yeah. These were neighborhood taverns, I guess. They were local people who ran them. And we always went in to get the bottle caps. Or get a soda. I guess kids probably can't go into taverns nowadays unless they're with an adult. But we played a game called bottle caps, where you pitch the bottle cap and hit it with a broomstick. But we were in and out of the taverns all the time. There were several restaurants at Lincoln Place too, that served ethnic food.
Were the places like that a way people could kind of hang on to their background and heritage?
Oh, sure, just sure. In fact, there was one coffee house that catered mainly to Macedonians and, I guess, the Slavic nationalities. The Macedonian, Bulgarian, Croatians there would go to the one coffee house. There were actually at one time two coffee houses that catered to Armenians. There may have been two, there may have been four, and it was kind of divided up two and two. The Mexicans did not have a coffee house, now that I think back. There was what was called Hungarian Home that is now owned by, it was donated to the Mexican Honorary Society. It's the top sign says Magyar, H-A-S, Magyar House. There were plays put on there, I can remember. The Mexicans did not have a coffee house. There were a couple of coffee houses for, I guess, the Armenian types, or Armenians, and a couple that catered to the Slavic. Same way with the taverns.
Mm-hmm.
Sociological studies should be done.
Might be interesting, definitely, to see what background. Now, you mentioned that you went through law school, and I know you're a retired judge.
No, I'm not retired.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm still working.
I had heard you're retired. I'm sorry.
Who'd you talk to? Judge Delaraney?
No, I didn't get with him this time.
I've been a judge this month, 36 years.
Goodness.
Yeah, I started very early.
Wow. What led you into that career area?
Good question. I went to law school because some of my friends went to law school. My one of my older brothers was a lawyer, and he didn't encourage me, but my friends went to law school, so I went to law school. I was going to school. I'd started at the U of I, and then I transferred to SIU, and I think I was trying to avoid taking some hard courses. I don't know. I was about 8 or 10 hours shy of having my degree at SIU. And friends of mine went to law school, so I went to law school. And then when I started practicing law, I practiced law a short time and did not like the practice of law. And there was an opening for associate judge, two openings, and I applied, and a friend of mine applied, and we got it. I think it's because, they're probably based on geographics back then, there was two openings. He was 26, I was 28, and I was from Granite City, he was from Collinsville, and we were chosen. I guess they wanted someone fresh, I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned food, a lot of different places to eat there of ethnic type food. How did that impact holidays and such in the area? Are there any special foods for?
Well, not that I recall. You see, there were a lot of bachelors that lived in Lincoln Place. And you've probably heard the story from the others. Some of the rooms were, I guess, in these apartment houses or cold water flats, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Single rooms would be rented to three men. And they would keep that bed warm 24 hours a day while one was sleeping, the other was working, and so forth. And there were a lot of bachelors in Lincoln Place. And so restaurants were needed to feed the bachelors.
Mm-hmm.
That's in my reasoning why there were so many restaurants. And then you had the steel plants, the Army Depot. People would go out to grab a quick lunch. That's the only reason I could think there were several restaurants in a small area.
Just to feed a large population. Some stats show it as much as 90-95% bachelors in the area at one time.
I'll bet at first it was.
How well was Lincoln Place accepted by, you know, there's the division even on the map that we talk about. Okay, this is this side of the tracks and this is the other.
One side was Niedring House Avenue, the other was Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was as much prejudice when I was growing up, but there was some. Maybe I just didn't want to think there was prejudice. But earlier on, I think there was a lot of prejudice, the wrong people on the wrong side of the tracks.
Okay.
And I hate to say this, but the Lincoln Place people looked down on the West Granite people. Now, I think it's unfortunate, but I think that was true. They talk about 10 years before the fights between the West Granite and the Lincoln Place kids. But the downtown people did look down on the Lincoln Place kids. They tell the story, I'm sure everyone's mentioned Andy Phillips, the basketball star,
mm-hmm.
who died not long ago. The Granite City High School team won the state basketball tournament, state championship in 1940 or 41, and Andy Phillips and about five others from Lincoln Place were on that team. I think the whole team was made up of Lincoln Place players. That helped break the barrier.
Okay.
I think that did. Although I understand there's a picture I've seen from years ago. They were all in this picture of a big crowd was taken of Lincoln Place. Are in Lincoln Place of the state championship team, and I understand the team would not accept the trophy unless it was presented in Lincoln Place.
Okay.
So It's my understanding also that the coaches, that they wouldn't play the Lincoln Place kids. And that one of the assistant coaches who was later mayor, Mayor Davis, I believe, arranged the game between the varsity and this pickup team at the clubhouse because I guess he was forward-looking and thought that everyone should be given a break.
You get past
and,
this.
And the Lincoln Place team beat the varsity, and that's when they started playing.
Okay. Kind of an intro into, hey, wait a minute, people are people.
So I think... Yeah, there were prejudices. Of the downtown people. Of course, I have this friend Rich Kelly, who was Catholic, who lived in downtown. But he was told by a girl he dated once or twice by the father that he could take her out. He'd come to the house to pick her up, but don't come back. You're Catholic. Now, I couldn't believe that. Granite City had a pecking order, which was a shock to me.
Hmm.
But there was some prejudice.
It's interesting to note that you notice that it definitely goes both ways, though.
Yeah,
it's not one sided. I think that's generally
true. It's interesting
in
talking to the teachers, that, and we respect the teachers so. That was emphasized that a teacher was always right, they enjoyed teaching the ethnics because there was no discipline problem, and the ethnics wanted to learn.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned before that all you had to do was say, hey, call your parents.
Yeah.
And it was...
That was...
Over.
But there was definitely prejudice. I don't know if I'm being objective when I say I don't think there was as much prejudice when I was, say, in junior high and high school. But there may have been, but I didn't see. I think the others paved the way, and I'll tell you a story in a few minutes about Mr. Dukalev, who I met in later years. There was no prejudice in grade school because we were all in the same boat. We had the neighborhood schools, of course.
Okay.
I guess the prejudice would have started possibly in high school, but I was an athlete, and I didn't. The athletics was the levelizer if you came from the wrong side of the tracks. I've heard that said, and now that I think about it, I believe it's true. I believe it is true. If you were a jock, you got to run with the upper... trust if there is such a thing. Now, Mr. Dukalev. I'll never forget, he ran a bakery in Alton, Duke's Bakery. I can remember him as a kid. He would come down to visit his uncle, who had a little confectionery in Lincoln Place. And 40 years later, when I met Mr. Dukalev, the one that was from Alton, he was a twin of his uncle. He aged 40 years. But a friend of mine and I went into Duke's Bakery in Alton. And we were talking, and I said, we were from Lincoln Place. And that brightened him up, because I think he was still in love with some woman from Lincoln Place from 50 years before.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he spent a lot of time there. His uncle was from there. And he asked us what we each did. And my friend said he was a teacher, and I said I was a judge, and he says, ah, from Lincoln Place. He says, you know, I'm a simple baker. And I said, Mr. Dukalev, I'm from Lincoln Place, and when someone says that, I'm a simple baker, that means you can buy and sell both of us many times. And he could, by the way. He made a ton of money working his tail off. And he had a little glint in his eye, and he kind of nodded that he had done all right. But he did say, young boys, when I was in high school, and that surprised me that he went to high school, because he came over in maybe 10. He lived to be 90-something. He went to the school, which was McKinley School, and I had heard that that was a high school at one time. He said, they used to yell at us, hunky, you hunky. He says, "We paved the way for you, young boys." Now, he said something to the effect, "But you got to persist, and we paved the way, made it easier for you boys." I guess there was a heck of a lot more prejudice when he came over. Now, Granite City is not that old of a town. I forget if it was started in 1900, 1910, but he was in on the, he was there before most of the Armenians came over. There were some Armenians that were there that early, but most came over a little later. But he's a Macedonian man, Dukalev, the EFF or OFF. I talked to some of the older, I used to like talking to the older, still do, and they talked about prejudices. But I guess it all equaled out eventually. But of course, these older people had prejudices too.
Of course,
they looked down on people. I know one thing: they looked down on people that were lazy.
Okay.
So and so is lazy. He spends too much time in taverns. Drinks too much. I'm sure there was a lot of prejudice, but I don't think as much when I was growing up.
Okay. It's good to see that some of it's going away and being handled. Yeah. Being hopefully going away and being handled rather than just. Let's see.
By the way, your questions are good questions because you're making me rethink and think about matters and trying to sort it out, and who knows, next week I might have a different answer, but go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You mentioned your father immigrated around, well, early 1900s anyway, 1920 time frame or so.
Yeah.
Did he describe anything? You have any stories about immigration process? Did he come through, what, Ellis Island?
Ellis Island.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, he came through Ellis Island. My mother came through San Francisco. And I don't know if I told you the story in the preliminaries about my father came through Ellis Island twice.
No, would you expand on that, please?
Wonderful story. He told me this in later years, and I'm going to jump ahead, and got concerned that this became public, and I'll tell you that story later. Here's what he tells me. First of all, I would talk to my dad about the massacres, and he was reluctant to talk about them. I think he had guilt feelings. He'd seen his father killed right in front of him when he was 12, 14 years old, that type of thing. But the Ellis Island experience, I think, is a wonderful story, and it made the papers and it worried him. But here's the story. He comes through the lines at Ellis Island, and he meets these two guys that he was on the boat with. They did not speak a common language. They just kind of hung around and were friends, but they were different nationalities. When he gets through and meets these two guys, they're excited and animated, and he knew something was wrong, and they couldn't communicate it, and finally they communicated by pointing to their papers, which were, I don't know, green, and his papers were pink or whatever. So he figured out he'd been rejected. Now, he said he was very ill because the ship, I guess he was seasick, he said it kept going in all kinds of directions. And so what he did, living by his wits, having come through the massacres, he pitched those papers and worked his way back through the line somehow and came through a second time. So he passed that time. And and that reminds me, I know during the celebration of the 200th anniversary of the country, there was someone from New York whose name was Vergetta. It was an English sounding name, and his name was Ferguson, and he had a heavy German accent, and the person interviewing him said, the TV commentator said, "Well, you have this heavy German accent, but you have this English name, Ferguson. How'd that come about?" He says, "Well, when he came through the lines, he was from Germany, there was some clerk who was snotty, he was rude. And he said to the clerk, the immigration clerk in German, something about Vergessen, how soon we forget." And the guy thought he was telling him his name, so he put down Ferguson. I saw that interview on TV. Anyway, so my father tells me that story, and 10 years later, I was a judge at the time, and I went down for a haircut, and I took him the newspaper article, showed a picture of him in the old, I guess, Metro East Journal. A picture of him and an interview with several people in Lincoln Place by one of the reporters. And my dad, I give him the article. I said, you probably have several of these. I said, this is a nice article. He says, well, he was upset. I said, well, what's the problem? He said, well, there are some things that reporters put in the paper they shouldn't put in. I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, that story about coming through the lines. Right? I said, welcome to the real world, Father. When you don't want a reporter to print something, you say, this is off the record. He says, well, they knew that shouldn't have been. But I said, are you worried? He says, well, you know, he had kind of a worried look. And I figured out what it was. He figured that since he came through twice or he fibbed, that he could be deported. And I said, and it's the only time that I can recall that I actually got aggressive and rude with him. And I said, in a strong voice, now look, if you paid a lawyer for this advice and paid him hundreds of dollars an hour, you'd take that advice. But I'm your son, but I'm a lawyer, I'm a judge, but you won't take my advice. And he looked at me, and I said, they cannot deport you. He said, why? And I made up some, well, I did use the theory of latches. But yeah. I said, no, and I gave him some legal maxims. And he's looking at me with a, I guess the term is jaundiced eye, and I said, see, you're not believing me. So I forced him to believe me that he could not be deported. Now, no one's going to deport a person for having done that. And I think he rested a little easier, but he was no dummy. He was pretty sharp, you know. Mm. But I think there are many, many stories like that. Friends and I have discussed how our parents and these old people, they were probably much younger than I am now, how they butchered the language and that type of thing. Wonderful stories.
That's great. Well, you know, you've mentioned the massacres and that. I've done some research on it and some reading. The numbers are amazing. What's amazing to me is most Americans have never heard of it.
Never heard?
Any thoughts on what, why the lack of publicity?
Oh, several reasons. First of all, there aren't that many Armenians. Well, the Turks massacred a lot of people. My parents did not like the Turks, but they didn't drum it into us every day like some Armenian families.
Okay.
Some Armenian families, it was drummed into them every day, and I tell you, it's good to know the history, but it shouldn't go to an extreme. My parents, I can definitely say, didn't like Turks. My father saw his father killed right in front of him. I can tell you that if you want to know. But anyway, there aren't that many Armenians to put the publicity out. Each year, there's a resolution entered in either the House or the Senate to declare Martyrs' Day.
Yes.
The Turkish government fights that. I was in law school, met about 15 Turks that were in the military that were at Washington University on some kind of program, and actually got into a conversation, and I said something to the effect about, I know most Armenians don't get along with the Turks because of the massacres, and they said, what massacres? And they don't teach it in Turkey.
Oh, no.
But see, we have our missile bases in Turkey, and so the Turkish government looks as it's kind of a, it's a, it was a civil uprising or something to that effect. There were no massacres. It was a civil war, a small civil war. But the statistics are 1.5 to 2 million Armenians. Yes. Of course, you may have heard someone tell you that Hitler has often said, or has said in the past, when he was creating the Holocaust, who remembers the massacre of the Armenians? This was before modern technology, and there are some pictures, but you don't have the moving pictures and whatnot. We don't have as strong a lobby as the Jews do. There just aren't that many Armenians. And with our missile bases in Turkey, well, right now with the Taliban, you know, Turkey has made their bases open, or their land open for our airplanes. It's something that shouldn't be talked about every day, but it shouldn't be forgotten. Now, it's interesting that I've met people who were raised in Turkey, what used to be, I mean, they've come over later. Some of them are less angry at the Turks than we first generation Armenians. Mm. And I think it depends in the family on how much anti-Turkish propaganda we got.
Okay.
So.
It could possibly be comparable in the United States to how much a family talks about African Americans being this or that in a
correct.
Negative tone,
correct.
As opposed to, hey, people are different.
Correct.
People
correct.
Do things that
correct.
People make mistakes.
Yeah.
People do things that are wrong.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about Lincoln Place experience or it seems like the sense of community that there was very strong.
Very strong, sure.
How well do you think that served people there?
Well, I think it was important. I know there was some prejudice, but at least we, you know, we could, I guess the original groups that came over could speak with one another, and, like any community, but growing up in America, there'll never be another Lincoln Place ever in the world. I mean, I don't see how there could be this influx of different nationalities into such a small area. But it was a great experience. But now, there was rivalry amongst the groups in Lincoln Place, even amongst Armenians. You've got your big city Armenians versus your country folk. When I say rivalry, kind of a pecking order. I think the Armenians have a good sense of humor, and it's been said that to get through some of the misery, you had to have a sense of humor. By the way, one thing I remember is you've heard of tea leaves, reading tea leaves. Well, I can remember very well as a youngster, my mother would have her friends over, and they would drink Turkish coffee. In those little cups, they would turn the cups over and spin them, and then they'd have a reader somewhere. And the stories they would tell, and laugh, and I think a sense of humor helped carry many of these people through. There's certain Armenian jokes that lose in the translation, but I think the Armenians had a good